Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Jennifer Landa.
And we are here to talk Star Wars news, breaking news from a long time ago. You know the drill. We got a This Day in History as well. And we're going to be talking mostly business today. A lot of business talk, which, you know, I personally sometimes get a little bored. That's just not with Star Wars my entire life. But I'm trying to clue in because I think it's important. It affects the creativity of Star Wars as well. We're going to discuss all that. And we are also going to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we'll have a Force Center recommends a book that you can try out on us and help the show in the process. We always catch up, Joseph, Jennifer, and I. This is our virtual hang. This is us at the bar going, hey, how was your week and how did Star Wars find you? So, Jen, what are you drinking and how did it go?
Yeah, I'm drinking some Jawa juice and I watched a little bit of The Mandalorian, doing a rewatch inspired by you, Ken, and loving it. And it was one of those things where I was like, you know, I need to work on getting my kids more involved with Star Wars. They love Grogu. They love all this stuff. And I was like, I've really been slacking in my training. So I went into the bookstore and I was like, you know, books are such a great way to get kids into Star Wars. That's how I really got my first daughter into it. And I found there's some great Star Wars books. There's a lot of middle grade. Mm-hmm. So a lot like for the High Republic, there's a lot of those things, a lot of adaptions from the movies, right? Which were a little bit too much. I thought, oh, my 3-year-old won't handle that. But this book I got, I highly recommend it. It's kind of nice, quite frankly. I would just buy this on my own as an adult. It's called The Galaxy Needs You, and it's written by Caitlin Kennedy, illustrated by Ida Caban. It's about Rey, and it really is kind of like an adaptation of The Last Jedi. Well, no, it's not. It's not. I would say the sequel trilogy. Okay. But it focuses on Rey, and it's just like for example, it says, have you ever stopped to think about how there is nobody else in the galaxy who is exactly like you? Nobody else has your hair or your eyes or your smile. And it goes on and on and on, talking about how wonderful you are as an individual. And then it points to like her battles with Kylo Ren, you know, her helping BB-8, her becoming friends with Finn, all these things. It's a wonderful message. I actually started almost crying in the bookstore. It really is quite touching. And it's such a simplified version of what Rey's journey is and kind of the messages that we've taken from the sequel trilogy. My 7-year-old read it and she loved it. She's like, I want to read it again. Because it really is like that elementary school age when you're figuring out who you are, figuring out who your friends are, you know, and what you stand for, right? Like all that's kind of happening when you're 6-7 years old. And so it really spoke to her. And I can't recommend it enough. It's just a great, great book. A surpriser. I did not know about this book.
I love this. The Galaxy Needs You is the name of it again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, The Galaxy Needs You. And it's all about, you know, what makes you you and what makes you special.
I mean, we've joked about this before, but like with Young Jedi Adventures on the way real fast here, like, yes, there are certain age groups attached to it, but I think we all need those simple direct messages sometimes.
Seriously. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. We all need those messages sometimes. And hearing you describe it, it also makes me think of that maybe there are some adults who need it, not just because of the way we feel that way, but because of the way people sometimes feel about Star Wars and understand. People sometimes walk away with the interpretation of Luke, Anakin, Rey's story that it's all about power. Because a lot of people tell them it's, you know, you got to use your power. It's all about your power. But how much stories are about like only Rey could have had that relationship with Kylo. Only Luke had that relationship with Vader. It is the stories are ultimately about who they are as people as much as them having all this Jedi power.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I think that's important. Yeah. Important lesson, not to spin it off. I think one of my favorite points, you've made jokes over the years that really helped me look at Han Solo and his end a little better was some of that, like, hey, it's not about what Luke can do. Luke can't do it. It's you, his father, it's me, his mother. And that's kind of part of the stuff going into that conversation and going on to the other movies where I think you can focus on the big, the Jedi, the Luke, the fall, the turn, the Kylo, the anger. And it's like this small, strong emotional beat that can sometimes be easy to miss with all the pew-pew around it. So that's why direct books written for 3-year-olds might help. All of us.
Yeah. Yeah. There's even, oh my gosh, there's one thing. I love this. Just one quick thing. There's a page where she's facing off with Kylo Ren. And it says, even if someone tries to tell you that you're nothing or nobody, just know that simply isn't true. And then the next page is of her, like, you know, grabbing the lightsaber. Oh, it's just so great. It makes me get emotional. I mean, it's such a simple statement, right? But it's taking that moment and just really crystallizing it and applying it to our life. And when people try to put you down or tell you that you're nothing or insignificant, right?
Yeah.
It's just beautiful. Really well done.
That's wonderful. I hope there's a Jen Landa short or TikTok on the way highlighting this book.
You know what? I am going to do a recommendation on some kids' books that I've...
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I hope that there's more on the way. I hope.
That's great. Well, you know, the whiskey's sliding down the bar to you, Joseph. You know, can you top the joy of a kid's book?
That's yeah. I can double fist a whiskey and a coffee and let's talk about kids books. I don't have any kids books. I did pick up a while back. I think I can't remember what it's called. It's the Little Golden Book of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And it's great. a great little Obi-Wan story. But the picture on the cover is him really triumphant riding Boga. Like, that's right before his entire life falls apart. Could you have found a happier image of Obi-Wan Kenobi for the cover of this book celebrating? Anyway, I love Boga. Yeah, so I had kind of different Star Wars adventures. We sometimes joke about, you're like, hey, where did Star Wars find you? This is the time of the Doctor Who convention that I go to every year. The last couple of years, I've just been going for one day. It's a great convention in Los Angeles called Gallifrey One. Very welcoming, but very, very deep lore Doctor Who. Did a couple of comedy panels with a friend of the podcast, Riley Silverman, that went really well. So that was really fun and gratifying. But I always love going to the Doctor Who convention because it's so open. It's so friendly. There'll be very, very deep cut classic Doctor Who costumes you're not going to see anywhere else. A monster called the Drashig from the Carnival of Monsters. But then the entire time I was there, there was just a guy, just Boba Fett.
What?
And nobody was like, "What? Hey, why is Boba Fett at the Doctor Who convention?" That is not the vibe. It's a vibe of total acceptance. And I've seen some like fun Star Wars mashups. I've seen like it's the fourth Doctor, but also Rey, like, and fun things like this. And like, no, this guy was just like, "Hey, I think I'll buy this action figure of Peter Capaldi, but I'm Boba Fett right now." I'm like, "Great, you do you, Boba Fett." So that was nice of Star Wars literally finding me at the Doctor Who convention. And then the other thing is, yeah, my wife, Sarah, said she wanted to do a full Mandalorian rewatch. So I was like, okay, we really got to start. We got to make this a priority. And I really forgot, like, how fast the first season is. And we've watched almost the entire first season in 24 hours.
Wow.
Well, they're short, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to sit down and watch a movie, you can knock out at least three Mandalorian episodes, particularly in the first season. And that's just been really gratifying. It's been really fun to rewatch the first season with the context of the later seasons. Lots of fun moments jumping out. But in particular, in episode 3, The Sin, when Din is delivering Grogu to the client and the door opens and the stormtroopers come out, it works great that Grogu's like, hey, I just get a vibe that these aren't great guys. It's always worked that Grogu's like, what are you doing? I thought we were cool, Din. Why are you dealing with me here? But then the additional knowledge of, like, he's got some pretty traumatic memories with people in white armor hovering over him with Order 66. So it's fun to find those little moments that always worked when they were first broadcast, but maybe have even more or different kind of resonance with more story.
Oh, yeah, I love that stuff. And I got some folks in our Force Center Discord have been in experiencing what you're talking about, Joseph, of like, man, there's a little line in episode 3 or that it just, it's not super, super intentional connected. It's just, it just hits more because, you know, that's part of the fun. Oh, that's great. Love that. Love that. I'm into Book of Boba Fett on my rewatch.
Nice.
And that's been a fun adventure, and you know, a lot of conversation around the Book of Boba Fett these days. Some that can make me grumpy, and that's even part of my other Star Wars adventure. But just, I got to the end of that first episode when the leader of the Tusken tribe gives him the water that he earned, right? Mm. And it was a big beat that I think hit even more for me. Now, I don't know, I just it just had a little bit of fist pumping, you know, moment, because it is about, you know, it's a lot, about a lot of things, you know, but it's just, there's just some like, oh, Boba, this is just the start of your journey. And I'm there for that journey. So anyways, I don't know. I hope I didn't cut you off, Joseph, if you still got some.
No. That's it. I want to make room to talk about other Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. That's awesome. The other thing, I keep going to this thing, we always talk about how Star Wars finds it. And I've just been doing more and more stand-up shows at Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank, and it's a lot of fun. And you know, when you're in the green room with a bunch of comics, you know, I've been in stand-up comedy since 2003 off and on for all that time. And yeah, stand-up comedy is full of a lot of, I don't know, bad people.
It's
always pro wrestling. I did my 15 years in pro wrestling. The Venn diagram's pretty tight. Big crossover there. That's all I'll say. But I'm a lot of nice people too, and a lot of people willing to chat, and the green rooms are fun. And because either I have a Star Wars hat on, or I say, hey, could you bring me up as you know, author of books, what we love Star Wars, that kind of thing, it just sparks conversations. And I've mentioned it before, and I don't want to, no, we here at Force Center don't think we're 100% right, this and that. Occasionally though, we can get grumpy. We have a certain way of looking at Star Wars, and sometimes, you know, that's just the conflict out in the world where you're just like, no, that's not why are you watching it like that? And I personally can get a little grumpy. So I've run into a lot of comics who just see Star Wars on my hat and they go, new stuff sucks, right? And it's just, it's a hunger. It's, you know, you don't want to go that route. I had a comic who took the time later in the show, we're in the green room, and he comes and shows me a Millennium Falcon keychain and shows me some Stormtrooper stuff on his car. And we had a great conversation, and someone with a very different background perspective than I, and he had been in the military, and he loves Stormtroopers. And so I had an interesting, like, okay, can I ask why the tools of the Imperial Galactic Empire? And he said, well, I was in the military, man. And there's just something about you go through all that training, you do this, and then you're just kind of sent out to catch bullets, man. And no one looks at you twice, and it's just expected, and it's what maybe you sign up for, but then the brutality of it, and just every time I see a door drop open on a ship and stormtroopers rush out, I feel for them. And you know, he wasn't sitting there going, and Palpatine's right, and but we weren't going that conversation, but it was just interesting to have him connect to it that way. You could easily say, I guess, with the rebels, but I think there's something behind of just like, and what's it for? All they do is that, and what is it, what's it for, and who's it for? So he did have some of those deeper thoughts, but it was just fascinating. And just how, you know, we've talked on the show, I've switched out my Imperial insignia baseball cap from a Rebel one. And we talk about the importance of those symbols more and more these days in the real world. But it would have been easy for me to be like, Stormtroopers, come on. But to hear his point of view, it was just interesting to see where Star Wars met him in his life and have a good, fun conversation about it. He also had some stuff to say about Book of Boba Fett. Boba Fett used to be his favorite character, but he felt the show ruined the character. But he approached it in a way that was very nice, where he just was like, I don't think the show's bad. It just wasn't for me. And I was trying to analyze a little bit about what that meant and what that means for fans of Boba Fett who, you know, I don't know, didn't like the switch in emotions and the goal, the drive, some of the convoluted and complicated gray areas of Boba Fett, a man trying to break the cycle of violence while also remaining at times violent and you know, taking the title of crime lord throws people for a lot of loops. But it was a reminder that you know, once you're out in that Star Wars world, that outside of our bubble, you can still have those wonderful conversations if you just try to find out what people are connecting with and where they're coming from. And that was a fun exchange, I'll say. So there you go.
Yeah, that's great. For me, the key difference between the two examples is one was a conversation where someone shared their perspective and didn't tell you, you must share that perspective.
Yes.
So it's like, this guy didn't tell you, I need you to agree with my factual statement that Book of Boba Fett is bad. You know, the yes. difference between people just looking at a hat and going, the new stuff sucks. Right. Huh. Is in, that is the truth. Mm-hmm. Not, I didn't enjoy the new stuff because X, Y, Z. Right. And the other one, you get to have a conversation, which I think is great. And I love understanding why people don't like something that I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but on that note, I might start wearing a different hat. that's fun. Green rooms are fun. Anyways. All right. We are almost going to get to the news here, but we have an ask. We love to just reach out directly to y'all and say, hey, here's something we'd love for you to help us do, get, show up for, all those kind of things. It's been very helpful, and we love our fan base, Joseph, but we have a specific ask this week. What is the ask?
Yeah, so we're still asking about YouTube. Everyone has been so great supporting us over there. We've had a great reception to our first two episodes of Figure Fights. We are very close to that 7,000 subscriber goal that we've been talking about a lot, but what we want to focus on today is this coming week. This Friday, February 24th at 3 p.m. Pacific, we are doing a live streamed Q&A on YouTube, and this is a special one. We enjoy it every month when we do this and just kind of have a hangout, honestly, with a lot of Star Wars fans, Force Center fans on YouTube. But this special, this Q&A special, Jennifer is going to be joining us for the first half hour from 3 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. It Yay. Will be a chance to ask Jennifer lots of questions and hang out. We'll answer questions too, Jennifer, but we might defer to you.
Oh, yeah. Boy. All right.
No pressure. No pressure. It really is just a hangout. It's so great. The vibe is really wonderful. So we look forward to doing that. So it's special that Jennifer is going to be able to join us for that first half hour. And then after Jennifer needs to depart at around 3:30, we've got some fun announcements about, well, I'm going to edit myself. I'm not going to say what. We've got some fun announcements coming. So if you want to be a part of that, if you want to hear it first live on the internet, join us there. So again, that is at 3 p.m. Pacific, February 24th.
Absolutely. Great job on that. Ask Sir. A lot of fun going down over on YouTube. Shorts, essays, figure fights, and more live shows. And Jennifer, getting all your questions. We got about 30 minutes. You guys all catch up. Get your Chirpa, Poplu, get all those questions. It'll be a lot of fun. Well, let's look at some Star Wars news. I put this headline as Return of Iger Khan, but we're pulling from a lot of different parts of Bob Iger's week last week, to be clear. But it's just kind of fun to have Iger Khan, the concept, back in full swing, even though he has been having to do some tough things. A lot of people thought he was brought back to be the nice hatchet man. And, well, some of that might be true. But Star Wars news emerged from Disney business talk. We're going to start here. And again, I'll put some stuff on the table here. We're going to go a lot of different spots here. But the exciting headlines last week read, Star Wars will unveil movie plans at Celebration. And I think that's exciting. But behind that fun is the sobering real world business news and Bob Iger's comments that Disney will need to be better at, quote, curating franchise content that is extraordinarily expensive. And, quote, we want the quality on the screen, but we have to look at what they cost us. Now, this seems to be primarily directed at Marvel. There was this big Hollywood Reporter article co-written by Aaron Couch and Boris Kitt saying Star Wars might have the opposite problem of Marvel. Not enough movies in theaters, the report claims. An insider key to the story says Lucasfilm will ramp up, but will have to abide by the same fiscal discipline as the rest of the company. We'll note the company that recently announced approximately 7,000 layoffs. So, as I said up top, creativity and business will forever be intertwined, and they should. Kids, if you want to get into the business, learn the business. That's something I wish I had spent some more time on when I was writing poems and stand-up bits. Learn some of the business. But let's dive in. I've said a lot here, but what are our overall thoughts on the news? Joseph, I'll start with you here. Did you have your Iger Khan shirt on last week? And where do you go with this?
Yeah, I'm excited about the return of Iger Khan. That phrase came about because for a while, big news would be announced at conventions, and then it would be announced on a Disney business meeting. So we jokingly started calling it Iger Khan. That's where the announcements happen. This is full court Iger press. This is not just one Iger Khan. The world is his Iger Khan. He is somebody, I think, who's done a really great job because this relationship that you talk about, Ken, between creativity and business. I mentioned it recently as reading about it in Sammy Davis Jr.'s biography of Sammy Davis Jr. being told it's called show business. And you have to take care of both. You have to put on a great show, and then you have to be aware of the business side of it. And I think that kind of goes both ways. We hear that as creators and go, oh, we need to be responsible for the business side of what we do. I think Bob Iger is somebody who has the personality and the understanding that this corporation could use a relatively charming front man, right? Some of this stuff isn't just interviews. These are performances. He's putting on a show to communicate exactly what he wants to. He's being a great front man, person for Disney. So I think that's great. I think one of the other big reactions to this news is I think this is really respectable reporting from respectable sources, but it is just a source saying that they're going to announce movie stuff at Celebration. There is no confirmation from Lucasfilm. So for people who, just see a headline fly by and maybe don't have time to dig into it, I think that's just a big asterisk to put in your heart and soul. A source has said this, that has not been confirmed yet, that we're going to get movie news at Celebration.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I saw that some of the headlines and I just went, well, no bleep. I've got to get some Celebration. But then I reminded myself, well, I was literally saying that in a hotel bar the first night of Celebration Anaheim. Of course we're going to get something here. And that didn't happen. So
So, I mean, that's, I think to answer your bigger question more directly, Ken, is, I'm never happy about the layoffs. So I don't want to say I'm happy about that. But other than that, I'm really excited by some of what he's talking about. I don't want less Star Wars in general, but I think for streaming, I think in general, the idea of fewer shows, higher quality, or smaller projects with creative solutions to budget problems, all that stuff is great by me. I absolutely love Marvel. I like a lot of the movies that they released in Phase 4 more than many of my other fellow Marvel and movie fans. I thought actually there was a lot of really interesting and really different movies and the TV shows. But it's so much to absorb. I think that our relationship to stories is changing because we're absorbing so many so fast and we don't have as much time to sink into them, to appreciate them, to revisit them, to know our favorite lines, you know, and to have kind of fan jokes emerge and all that kind of stuff that makes it more than just a story, but kind of seeps into our lives. I know that's happening for a lot of people, but I think just the sheer volume of quality from streaming's initial Hungry Hungry Hippo, just, you know, get as many subscribers by making as much stuff as possible. It has been changing our relationship to storytelling. And I think a little bit of a slowdown might be beneficial to the way we interact with stories.
That's a big well said for me in trying to sum up some of my feelings on it. I think there's both positive and negative things in this story. Yes, some the layoffs and just, you know, it's the beginning of the year. And this is where you always see, I think the last two times I've been laid off, it was January 31st, right? Like we're into the new fiscal year, time to do it. And so that's kind of sobering. And then, but some of it isn't bad. I think you could look at even on the Marvel side, this isn't a Marvel podcast. I don't spend a lot of time in the Marvel world, but like, okay, yeah. Pulling back and seeing what's going on is never a bad thing. And Jen, I want to get your thoughts on this, but one of the things I'll shout out to the Star Wars Newsnet folks had this great article of they linked to a Boardwalk Times tweet, which had a great interview with Bob Iger. And I just liked in this little clip of Bob Iger kind of saying, yeah, we were a little hungry for subscribers. That was kind of the lay of the land. This was also about 4 or 5 years ago now. I'm adding that in. And we're now re-looking at the whole process. None of that is a bad thing for me. But Jen, before I get deeper into my thoughts, get your overall thoughts on the Iger of it all here.
I love it. I think that Disney has been full steam ahead for a while now with Marvel, to the point where I've really wanted to learn more about Marvel and it's been hard for me to dive in because there's so much. It's like a tidal wave. I can't keep up. And it's not just me. And I think what's happening is that really since COVID, you know, movie theaters, as we know, have not recovered from that. So it's like we're in this new era where studios are trying to figure out how much, you know, how long does our movie stay in the movie theater before we release it on streaming, you know, so that we can make enough money. Or it's just like all of these things that are happening. And I'm happy that Disney is saying, hold on, let's figure out our strategy to continue making great content that is going to still help our business, right? And I think that's what Bob Iger is so great at doing, is that he really does care about the stories. He knows how to talk with the artists and the creators so that everyone's happy, but also managing the business side. That's why they brought him back, right? I look at something like HBO, which they're very strategic about their releases so that each show is like a premiere event. And I go back to the Ms. Marvel and what was it, Book of Boba Fett, that were simultaneous?
Obi-Wan.
God, that's even bigger, right? Oh my gosh, I think about that all the time because I'm like, I need to go back and watch Ms. Marvel because I could not commit to doing both. And I think that they're going to have to really be a little bit more strategic. I think in terms of Star Wars, I feel like they've been pretty good. You know, they haven't been putting out too much stuff. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah. Joseph, if you have any additional thoughts on that one there, Jen brought up some great points, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think just from my perspective is, you know, not a Hollywood titan by any means, but I've had the opportunity to pitch a lot of shows and I know a lot of other writers and creators who have been pitching in these last few years. And from that end, from the creative end of trying to get a show made, the metric that all of the streaming streamers have been on has been subscriber growth. Right. And it's obviously not a metric that can continue forever, right? Like mm-hmm. Netflix and, you know, Paramount Plus aren't going to start being like, we need to make more babies so they can subscribe. Like, you can't, you can't, unless aliens actually come. Exponential subscriber growth is not a metric that can sustain.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's created all this confusion where sort of like the standard ways that buyers would analyze what is valuable for them to make from a business perspective have just been in chaos, in constant moving goalposts. Mm-hmm. So finally having, you know, one of the biggest and most successful streamers move away from constant subscriber growth to saying, what else is going to be a metric that we can give to, you know, investors and shareholders to say this is working? And going back to profitability, that has to do with subscriber rates, but I think that also has to do with, does it generate merch? Does it have, does it get awards during award seasons? Mm-hmm. All these different kind of things that we're a little bit more familiar with, I think might give more varied shows a chance to find an audience and a chance to succeed. Last thing I'll say on this is, you know, Netflix kind of pioneered the, we want one of everything. We're going to have this for everybody in the world. If you like this exact kind of show down to this ridiculous algorithm, right? Of a, you like teen romance comedies that happen in Paraguay. Great. Now we got one of those. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of funny to joke about until you're pitching something and they're like, great fantasy show. We already have a fantasy show. Mm-hmm. We won't consider anything fantasy. Oh, that's a great Asian comedy. We already have our Asian comedy. We don't want anything else, period. Mm-hmm. There's so much that's been about algorithm. Just get one of everything and look at things as sort of you're collecting your one of everything. And I'm kind of hoping that a change in analyzing what the metric is might help with some of that, of what is being created, and letting the audience have room and a chance to go, we like that. We'll prove it with money.
Yep.
Prove it with money. Yeah. You also, you're giving me bad memories of a sentence that stalled and perhaps ruined my writing career. It's too much like Good Omens. Just, just changed trajectory of my life a couple years ago. And that's what it is. So yeah, both of you are saying some wonderful things here. And Joseph, one of the words you used in that last section there, I really love, confusion. There's just a lot of confusion, I think, around their offices, any streamer's office, our office, what to do. Again, it's still all so young. We're still figuring this out. I'm still having those conversations. So what show is that? Okay. What's that on? Right. How can I find it? You know, I'm a sports fan. I don't have a lot of live TV options in my current life. So like even watching the Super Bowl, I'd like, where do I do that? How do I, and, you know, like, and it's all changing rapidly. And I think, it's something I think we've said before, but we'll keep saying, just like the ability to kind of weave and bob and figure this out and change and grow even after you've been part of big, giant change and growth. We didn't just, you know, Mando doesn't show up in November 2019 and bam, they got it all figured out. And I think Iger does have that way of communicating. Nothing against Bob Chapek. I'm sure he's a great guy. I just... just didn't, you know, have that vibe of charisma that sometimes needed to convince you that bad things are okay. And that's sometimes the job of CEO. We're not rooting for CEOs around here, but Iger has a certain way about him. So it was interesting. It was fascinating to take a dive into this stuff here. But going to the Star Wars side of it here and the movies, you know, in this confusing time, I almost am glad a Star Wars movie hasn't come out in the last couple of years because I just don't know. Mm-hmm. It would have been a weird time. Like, you know, looking at some of the struggles with Marvel and everything, not even about what's in the shows, but just or in the movies. But, you know, do I wait? Do I go to the theater? Is it going to be on Disney Plus in a week? I don't know. Am I paying for it on Disney Plus in addition to my sub, or is it already there? There's a lot of things. So maybe I'm glad Star Wars is just kind of like, we're going to sit this one out, give you some shows, and we'll come back here when things are known. General question here, but go with this wherever you want. Like, Jen, would you be okay with some Star Wars shows being pulled back? Not ones that are already announced, but just slates, you know, the development slate we haven't really seen. And we're going to pull back so that maybe more movies can be made or more energy can be put into a bigger show. And any other changes to the approach of Disney Plus that you might want for Star Wars?
I think Star Wars is, like you said, smart to wait it out because there was just so much drama with the unnecessary drama with the sequel trilogy. It was kind of like letting the dust settle. And they went and they proved that Star Wars is alive and well and fantastic storytelling with The Mandalorian and all of those shows on Disney Plus. They clapped back, as we might say. So in terms of like going forward, I can see them doing maybe one streaming show a year and one movie a year. And I think to me, that would be a sweet spot. I think if you do two, I mean, and also maybe an animated show, right? Or some animated shorts like the Tales of the Jedi stuff. We're going to talk about Liam Neeson in a minute. I almost said watering down. Oh no, I've taken his point. But I think that Star Wars works well when it just hits it out of the park a little. You don't need to have so much, right? Like I don't need to have a ton of Star Wars. I like that when it becomes an event. Andor really became, for me, it became an event and just was, it was such a home run. Obi-Wan Kenobi, same thing. And I think going forward, that would be nice so that all of the focus is around that one show that year. And then we go to the movie theater in December for the one Star Wars movie.
we're gonna talk about Liam in the second half there. No, I understand where you're coming from there. And it's, I could have a new Disney streaming show every month and I could be happy with it. But I have to admit, like on the comic side, one of the reasons I pulled out of the comic side, I go to my shop and there's eight different, and I'm like, I'm overwhelmed and I don't digest it. Just like what you were saying earlier, Joseph, I flip the pages to finish them. And that's so that I can pick up on some of that energy there. Big question. I know, Joseph, about all of this here, but your thoughts on the Star Wars side of it all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of complicated exactly what Iger is saying, because what he's been saying in some of the interviews, like the video one with the Business Bunny channel, was that they're pulling back on general entertainment, which means not genre, and they're really focusing on the brands that have delivered for them, like Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars. And I feel like a lot of the let's pull back talk is about Marvel, and I feel like maybe some of the Star Wars specific stuff is let's be careful not to spend too much money. Let's make the same amount of Star Wars or maybe even more, but let's really make sure that we're getting the value out of the dollar and not pumping it out, right? To pump it out. So I think we're probably not looking at a huge pullback on Star Wars shows, but I'm generally okay with the I wouldn't want it to be too much more than what they're doing, put it that way. Like,
right.
Yeah, I'd be really happy with a few Star Wars shows a year on Disney Plus, like two live action, like spread out, right? One's in March and one's in November. So they have room to be like, we're in Kenobi season, right? Now we're in Andor season. Like, I think that was nice this year. I'd love to be, we're in Ahsoka season. Now we're in Dr. Aphra season or, you know, whatever it's going to be. An ongoing animated show, you know, I love The Bad Batch, so I'd love to see that keep going. And then I think, the experiments like Visions, Tales of the Jedi, the Young Jedi Adventures, things that are designed to be kind of for the more hardcore fan and an entry point, not necessarily meant to be like, you know, Target is going to be covered in merch from Tales of the Jedi, right? It's not a full push. So I think the output that we have is pretty good. I'd be happy with more like one-off animated specials. So when you're hungering for a little bit more storytelling, it's just kind of one thing that you can sit and digest for a while. I think for me, maybe the biggest thing is I have nothing to back this up. This is totally irresponsible speculation. Total speculation. I wonder if Kenobi would have had a slightly higher budget under Bob Iger.
Oh, yeah.
I just feel like there was, because another thing Iger has been talking about is marketing. That's a huge, huge part of the expense too. So balancing how much I wonder if Iger would have been, let's do a little less advertising for Kenobi because the interest is there, and let's put a little bit more money on screen so the value is there.
Yeah.
I just recently rewatched Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's my favorite character. I love the show. Longtime fan of classic Doctor Who that has, you know, a budget that's just the little engine that's trying. And so I'm not terribly bothered by lower special effects, but it is odd to watch the premiere event of last year with Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi and feel like corners were cut and be like, why? Right. So I think some of what Iger is saying is like, let's look at, I'm not saying we're not going to spend money. I'm not going to say we're not making more Star Wars. I'm going to say, let's really look at the balance of exactly how we spend it, so it has the most value to us.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm in agreement on that too. You know, we can't have an Andor every time. I imagine the budget on that was rather high, but you can feel it in other spots. You can feel it in other spots.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, please go ahead.
No, I was going to say, yeah, in terms of, you know, the shows and I get the feeling that it is a little bit narrow focus coming. Let's make sure we're making the right decisions across the board. And, you know, I oddly enough have confidence that Star Wars will continue to go and they'll get some of the movie stuff right. But that's a bigger conversation there. But Jen, any final thoughts on this part of the discussion?
No, I just really got me thinking about Obi-Wan Kenobi. And you're so right. I really do believe that it could have been. I mean, Andor was spectacular because of what they did with the city of Ferrix. Mm-hmm. And just everything just felt all the locations for Obi-Wan. That should have happened. It's just kind of, I mean, it was a great show. We loved it. So many wonderful things. But boy, if
the
they
vast majority of it looks great, I think, honestly, watching it again, it's just those one or two moments. Yeah. And it's just this weird disconnect that I don't think if that was a season of Mando or Book of Boba Fett, I don't think it would have bothered me. But it's weird when it's Vader and Kenobi.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, there was definitely some of those moments there, and it's fair to say we'll be honest about that. The story mentions that Taika Waititi's movie is still in development, and I just wanted to ask this: what does that news do to your soul, Jen?
I was shocked. I was like, "Oh, they're bringing that one back." I really felt like it was kind of dead. I really thought it does make me think. Well, gosh, maybe he still is in talks. And rewatching The Mandalorian, and I was watching the final episode of season one. You know, and what a performance he gave. And he directed. And he directed it. So I was like, oh, he still isn't good. And, you know, it's one of those things that maybe he's been having lunch there. And then they were like, oh, it's back. It's back on. His movie's back in development. So who knows?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, I asked that question because I had a weird reaction. This is a leading question for me. I just went, all right. I think and this is someone I'm a fan of, and it has nothing to do with I don't want to see it. Cause I love that episode you're talking about outside of a couple beats. I just think it's pitch perfect. And yeah, I just had a weird, like, it just seems like, I don't know. Seems like there's a lot of things in the rearview mirror, and that's, I'm okay with it. So to kind of be like, oh, okay, I guess I have to think about this again or get ready for this. I'm at a if he walks out on stage at Celebration, then I'll believe it, sort of, you know, because it wouldn't be the first time that things have changed. And anyways, I don't. So Joseph, again, it's a leading question. That was my reaction, but what was yours?
I feel very the will of the force about it. I love Taika Waititi and I love his work. I would almost rather have it be announced that, hey, we're experimenting with a lower budget Disney movie event, Disney Plus movie event, and Taika Waititi is going to do that. So for those who are into it, they can enjoy it. But it isn't this massive torture test of this is the first return to theatrical, because, like I said, I love Taika's work. I would love to enjoy it. But there has been, you know, some. I think his style of humor came across really, really fresh. And now there's a little bit of pushback to it. You know, there's kind of a general consensus of a lot of people don't like Thor: Love and Thunder. I do. But, you know, I think there is a little bit of that cloud. And then the whole big thing ultimately is just, does this film feel like the right story at the right time? Since we know nothing about it, does it feel like the right next theatrical thing? So I don't. That's a lot to say. I don't feel strongly. If it's the right movie, great. If it's not, okay.
Yes. Yes. At the end of the day, that is the case. And again, I'm not even down on him. I don't want to say that. I just had that, like, this is, you know, the Rian Johnson trilogy, anything that pops up. And that's been part of the problem, been well documented, been debated on podcasts worldwide about, you know, the announcement of movies, Patty Jenkins of it, all that stuff. And some of it, I just don't think you can help. And some of it, I don't think it's just the way the business, and it's just all spotlights are shining on Star Wars all the time. So it was probably a good idea to be like, hey, on Investor Day, hey, investors, look at this guy. You like him? We like Star Wars. Yay. And I totally get it. I just think my excitement has definitely waned. So also with you, Joseph, too. There's as the leadoff hitter for the new lineup of movies, it might be a weird choice, but we'll see. But we'll see. That's all about what will be presented to us, and as you said, listening to the will of the Force.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I say one other thing about just the general Disney Plus side of things before we move on? You had asked this great question of, you know, other changes to approach that Disney Plus might want, and I think I have Iger hopes that some of the stuff that has been sort of programmed by the numbers and by algorithm might get a little bit more of a human touch in specific examples of, like, I know it works for a lot of people. For me, I really don't like Bad Batch and Mando on the same day. Like, we have 7 days.
Yeah.
I would love time to use them. I would love there to be, there's animation Friday, and that's a whole thing. I would love it if the episodes didn't drop at midnight on the West Coast, but like 6 p.m. West Coast, 9 p.m. East Coast, so they could be more of an event. And then the huge thing that I wonder if it's a possibility, if I would love physical media. I would love to be able to buy my dad the Blu-ray of Mandalorian season 1 and 2 and Book of Boba Fett. And I think it is, those physical releases are something that grow our attachment to a thing, to be able to hold it in your hand. I think that's another thing with the streaming age. Everything just kind of feels like it is floating away because it's in this ether that could be taken away from us at any time. And I think people will have a stronger relationship to something if they can literally hold it in their hands.
A little more permanence, right?
Yeah.
There's kind of that. Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of just bringing up Disney Plus and going, what Star Wars thing am I going to watch today and right now? But there's something about that. Just to get your dad to watch Mando. That's what we need.
That's really what I want.
Hey, let's end on a high note, though. And I think we've celebrated some things here. But, hey, let's look at the future here and all those headlines. And I want to make sure anyone who had a short or a video or a headline being excited about them possibly announcing movie plans at Celebration, I'm with you, too. That is exciting. And it is going to be fun if that happens. But what excites us about the possibility of movie plans getting announced at Star Wars Celebration Europe? Jen, you will be experiencing CouchCon, right, this year? What are you looking forward to if that's on the docket?
I hope that they announce their plan for the next 4 to 5 years and that we get some titles and fonts on screen. I'd be happy with that, right? But again, like you're saying, we've... Unless they bring the person on stage, I'm going to take it all with a grain of salt because look at Rogue Squadron, right? I really got my hopes up with that one. And I don't want to say got burned, but I was a little disappointed. So we'll see what they say. We'll see what they say. I'm looking forward to it.
I think that's very fair. Did feel a little burned, no matter what caused it. That can be the result, and I think that's a fair thing. Joseph, we will be there, set to be in Star Wars Celebration Europe. Whether or not we'll be in those panels, that's up to the fate. what excites you about this?
Yeah, we might have CouchCon. Just our couches will be physically much closer to the panel. I think knowing that I don't need them to announce like a 4 or 5 year slate. I want that, but I also don't want them to announce something and then stumble, you know?
Yeah.
So I'd be happy with, this is the next film we're doing. This is the date. Yeah. This is the name of the film. This confirmation, every one of those Damon Lindelof stories, writer's room you heard is true. That's the next project. This is the era. Mm-hmm. Here's a tease for it. I think that would be great. And the thing that excites me about it is moving on from the which project is going on, which project is a rumor, which project is actually happening, and kind of just pointing all of the fun Star Wars discussion toward the slow ramp up to this big special event moment of Star Wars returning to the big screen.
I love that a lot too. I love that a lot of just like, hey, this is where we're going. And it's maybe specific to a movie. I'd like some clarity. That's not very exciting for a panel. Hi all, welcome to the panel, which we clarify things, but I kind of need that result. And a cavalcade of names and directors. I do want some titles and fonts. I'm with you, Jenna, on that. 'Cause who doesn't want fonts? That'd be one thing. But if it is the Lindelof led thing, there's a lot of people on board for that project, to be clear. But that's the way the project is kind of referred to, how it's referred to. So that's what I would want. Like this, it's not a title, just title and font, but here's where we're going. Not the plot of the movie, not even maybe the full cast or anything. Just like there, here's where we're going. We're excited and spending time with it. Almost to your point earlier, Joseph, of all the content of, I don't need a 5-year plan or something's fine, but I don't need, and this. I just mean here's where we're going, and that'd be fun and that'd be exciting. We'll see.
Yep.
Well, either way, we hopefully will be in a pub talking about it.
That we can do for sure.
That we can do for sure indeed. We are not done talking about all this, about Star Wars and more Star Wars and spinoffs and what do you want and what do we get. So stick around for more. Before we do that, though, we're going to have a Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And Joseph, what do we have?
My evil twin Joseph is recommending. You know, we've been recommending the same High Republic book for a little while, and we still recommend it because we still want to read it. But I'm just going to throw this out there. The paperback just came out of Princess and the Scoundrel, and I actually bought it for my wife for Valentine's Day, and that really reminded me of how great I think Princess and the Scoundrel is. I know Ken agrees, so we're going to recommend that. The Princess and the Scoundrel by Beth Revis.
That is a great choice. Highly recommend that. Get that book. Help us out. Download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audio book. All right, quick break. On the other side, Liam Neeson steps into the batter's box here on ForceCenter.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back to Force Center. We are taking a look at Star Wars news. And hey, let's just dive into this one. Liam Neeson gives his hot takes on Star Wars spinoffs. That's where I'm going with the headline. But here's what happened. While appearing on Watch What Happens Live with host Andy Cohen and guest Paul Rudd, America's uncle, everyone loves Paul Rudd, Liam Neeson was asked about his desire to appear in a Qui-Gon Jinn Disney Plus show. They had I don't know the format of the show, but they had someone on screen kind of almost like zoomed in asking this question. Neeson had quite the reaction there. He rebuffed the idea, saying that while he enjoyed his two lines in Kenobi, his opinion is that Star Wars is diluting its own magic and taking away the mystery. So I'll try no leading questions here. I'll say this and put this on the table. I do feel he said, hey, for me a little bit, to the point of like, this is just what I think. He said it pretty strongly. He said it in that Liam Neeson way. He's put his foot in his mouth many times before, sometimes to a problematic level, let's be clear. But, I'll start with that energy there. But Jen, what did you make of this?
You know, he is of a different time. That's what I'm chalking it up to. When you watch the video, like, he doesn't do it. It's not like mean-spirited. He just like he's old school cinema and theater. And I think he really compartmentalizes his own work because he's done voiceover work for Star Wars in the Clone Wars and obviously Rise of Skywalker, Tales of the Jedi. So, and then he does all these action movies, which are kind of the same story. But I think that's the point, is that he sees it as those are movies and that this is TV. And I think he really just does not like TV. That old school mentality of TV is inferior. So it kind of cracks me up. I mean, he just reminds me of like, you know, a lot of older people. They kind of lose their filter. And he's just like, and even Andy Cohen told him, he's like, I like that. I like that you just speak your mind, even though this is, you know, and he didn't say this, but this is like Disney that you're basically, you know, not bashing, but it was kind of funny.
Yeah, no, and this was one of those ones where I saw some of the headlines and I was like, well, let me see what's going on. And I think it was important to watch the clip because the energy is a little different. And it is what you're saying. Yeah. And even some of the stuff that I don't want to defend anything you said before, but some of the stuff you said before, I'm like, I get maybe what you thought you were trying to say. I get what you were trying to confess, but maybe not so much. Like, I just think there's a lot of that going on with Liam here, but I'm a fan. Like, I love what he's done. And you're so right, Jen. Like, you just want to pull out some of his IMDb credits and go, well, you did that, but also you did Clone Wars, which expanded the magic, which really took a deep dive into stuff that was before the film. And yeah, you're in your 70s now, right? If he's not in his 70s, he's definitely approaching it. Yeah. And yes, you have a view of you were an Excalibur while Fall Guy was on TV. Like, I totally get it. But it was a little different back then. Nothing against Patriots, but like, totally get it. Totally get it, guy. You were in a different era. So, anyways.
Ken Knapsack says Fall Guy was a bad television show. That's the headline.
I mean, he was a stuntman just mixing it up. I mean, what could be wrong about that? yeah, so there you go. Joseph, what do you make of this?
Oh, I make so many things. Like all headlines about what an actor says, the headlines are written like Liam Neeson called the press to his front lawn and is like, I have an announcement.
Right.
The magic is gone. I shall not be Qui-Gon. It was asked a question about whether he would commit a huge amount of his time, energy, and life to doing a Qui-Gon Jinn solo show. And he was like, no, I don't want to do that. So he didn't even say, like, I'm entirely done. He didn't even say, like, they do another Kenobi series. They want me to do voiceovers in a booth. Sure. Like, he's not even saying no to that, you know? So. Yeah. A, it is first coming from he was asked whether he wanted to do an entire solo show. And I think that was a part of the strength of it. Totally agree. He has a, as he says in Taken, a special set of skills. And one of them is quotes that are like, right on the edge there, Liam. Or sometimes over. But I feel like he has said recently in a red carpet, somebody's sticking a microphone in his mouth, would you do a show? And he's like, no, but maybe a movie. So I think that, you guys are spot on that he still has a little bit of that. Like, movies are where this big epic storytelling that really moves the needle in culture, that's where that happens. Mm-hmm. You know, and I do take it all with a grain of salt, you know, given that he's, you know, made many Taken sequels.
Exactly.
And then many movies that look, I have not seen all of them, but many of them look like they simply could be sequels of Taken. He has created a genre of Liam Neeson has a special set of skills in the snow with the bear in, you know, Hawaii. I don't know. I haven't seen them all, so I can't speak with authority.
Right.
I've seen every Taken and I enjoyed them. Yeah.
He diluted the magic of Taken One. Like, come on.
Anyway. But I think he is speaking also then to this kind of larger thing that I think is very generational. We grew up with a part of the absolute power of Star Wars was its rarity, right? There was very few books, and you maybe read some comics, right? But that's part of what gave it its power. And I understand getting to that place where you're just like, I want it to feel really special again, which and more mysterious, right? Mm-hmm. I understand that, but also I think times change, storytelling changes. I know I was saying in the first half that I would like there to be not too much, so we have a little bit more time to absorb them.
Yeah,
but I also want there to keep being an expansion of Star Wars. Absolutely. I'm not at all saying, like, I think there should only be 3 movies every 10 years. Because I think the value that maybe isn't being appreciated by Liam Neeson, I don't know, is that with more stories, there's more inclusion, more new ideas, more world building, seeing things in a new light like the Tuskens. And there's always more new mysteries, right? I love that Star Wars is tip of the iceberg storytelling, and you just hear about a little thing and it makes you imagine and wonder. And in all the new Star Wars storytelling that we have, that spirit is still there. Mm-hmm. We might learn a lot more about how everything else works on Tatooine, but then there'll be some other suggestion of this other part of Tatooine or this other idea on Tatooine. So for me, that's a lot of the way that the mystery continues. As the story unfolds, it keeps suggesting even more story. And so the wonder stays alive for me.
Mm.
Yeah. I really like what you're saying, and I think our we went to the same headspace of just the value of it. And I'll say, you know, again, I don't want to pick on Liam. All right, I am even someone who loves Love Actually. Like, okay, like, come on, I'm okay with it. It is. You haven't watched it, buddy. Then you haven't watched these shows. You're not getting them. You're not. It isn't diluting the magic. And there's ways to dilute the magic, and we can discuss that. I think we've all expressed, like, yeah, hey, slow down. I keep picking on the comics. I'm so sorry, but sometimes I'm just like, I don't know. Okay, around every corner is this thing going on, and I get it. I want to have that conversation. We can have some of it here, but I Star Wars is what Star Wars has always been. It is this giant thing that has inspired generations after generations, and I would love an age of you know, super original content and you know, like the auteurs of the 70s make an original, you know, but that's, we're not in that. And in this umbrella of pop culture stuff, it's not just, you can be cynical about it and say, yeah, you're just pulling the toys from the 80s and moving them forward. And sometimes that happens. And those things don't necessarily hit as hard, huh? They don't feel as deep and as powerful as, say, the Marvel, the Star Wars of the world, Lord of the Rings, or now lately Game of Thrones, Witcher comes to mind. All those kind of shows. We are in this era. Look at what Last of Us is doing. It's a video game affecting people souls. So that's now a world. Last of Us is a world. There's a second video game, but there's, you know, more shows, kind of more seasons going to come in that world too. And the value in it. I was just rewatching the Disney Gallery Legacy episode. I needed 28 minutes on the treadmill, not 50 for episode 2 of Book of Boba Fett. So I was like, let me watch this. And it was timed very well with the story of just hearing, you know, Filoni's got obviously a lot of great things to say. And he's talking about the great prequel Duel of the Fate, which other people probably thought at that time, in fact, we know they did, was diluting the magic. So Liam, even something you were in was considered that, and it didn't. It expanded it. But also, just, there's a great value to what you're saying, Joseph, of George created this world. George created this giant world, but also Favreau in that spirit is bringing on creators, bringing on collaborators, and we're getting more stories. And now we are getting the inclusion, the diversity of perspectives. And you can go back. You mentioned the Tuskens. I was going to mention the same thing of something – that could have been left to mystery from 40 plus years ago now has a wider perspective, wider, I think just bigger value to the Star Wars story. And we're seeing the Tuskens in a different way. So I joke, but I struggle to call them Raiders because I just don't think that's accurate anymore. You know, and it's just even when sometimes on the shows, I'm like, well, what? Oh, don't say that, because I just feel different about them. And that's the expansion of the story. And it does create more mysteries and does create more storytelling. And it's not going away. Star Wars is not, even if they stopped tomorrow, it's going to be giant and it's going to pull people into it. And this is the world we're in, not just because we have a podcast about it, because it is very much in our life. It is our art. So you know, respectfully, Liam, I disagree. I don't think it's diluted any of the magic. And I'll let you go. Sorry, Jen, I'm ranting. But it's like, I used to get in a fight with my friend, an old coworker of mine from the digital media era you know, he yelled at me from Houston that Kenobi just shows that they were out of ideas. This is before the show even hit. Of ideas. And I'd say, no, you don't. Number one, you don't know what they're doing. And two, it's going to have some power to it. And we're going to learn more about this key character in our lives. At this key moment in his life, and the series comes out, and you could focus on, you know, it wasn't a show answering how Luke got that T-16 Skyhopper model. That wasn't the show. The show was so much more than that, and so much value to it, and so many, and then Little A, all the things. But you could just look at it. We don't need to explain that. And I think it's how you view it, and how you dig in and roll up your sleeves and jump in. So Liam has not rolled up his sleeves to understand probably. A lot of the shows here, and I would say that to his face and then run, because then he might punch me, though he's just an actor. I don't know how much fighting skills he has. Jen, sorry. Thoughts on all of this there too.
I think you're absolutely right. I just think he hasn't really taken the time to dive into it. He's looking at, you know, episodes 1 through 6 that were, you know, from the mind of George Lucas, that is a, you know, who he probably, and we all believe, is an auteur, an artist, right? And so he sees that as like a special moment in cinematic history. And now it's just about, perhaps he's thinking, oh, it's just like not a cash grab, but like, ugh, another Star Wars story, right? But it's just like, if it were a book, how many, you know, book series are there? There's tons of book series. And it's the same idea. We want to go on more adventures with these characters that we've fallen in love with. It's just a new story, right? Yeah. And it's like you're saying, this is our art. And yes, it's owned by Disney, but that doesn't mean that, I mean, look at all these wonderful creators that are bringing their ideas and their vision to Star Wars and playing in that Star Wars playground. It's why it continues to make money. If it was not good, people would not want to be, you know, we wouldn't have podcasts. We wouldn't have all of these fans that have hung around for as long as they have. So I just think, you know, if he were to take the time, I'm sure he would maybe grumpily say, all right, yeah, this is pretty good. But I just think he's an older gentleman, and, you know, he's focused on. I actually heard a podcast with him a while ago where he was like, he doesn't even want to do, if he looks at a movie and he knows that there's night shoots or maybe that it might be cold, he doesn't want to do it. Like, that's the stage of his life that he's in right now. You know what I mean?
More power to him.
Yeah, really. He's earned it, right? Nothing wrong with that. I mean, so anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying there too, and yeah, it's a reason we have Force Center and not GoBot Center. Like, not everything hits, everything strikes a deep chord, and sometimes it is just, though, as people point out, GoBots actually preceded Transformers. Look at all that, and one of your points there too, Jen. Like, I love this world, so I want to stick around. I am obviously a big fan of the world of Westeros and Song of Ice and Fire, and there's a lot of potential spinoffs and stuff. Some might be affected by that business over there, the HBO Max and all the stuff going on with Warner Brothers. But I'm intrigued by it, because why not? If I love this world, a spinoff show about the world of E.T., which is was something, an animated version, it would be a different story, a different perspective, different people, different faces in the world of Game of Thrones. And that has great value. And as a fan of that world, as a fan of that map, I want to learn what's going on there. And if you can tell me that story, yeah, absolutely. If not, you know, like I said, I would say I'm not a huge Marvel fan. I swing through, I enjoy what I enjoy, and I move on. And that's fine with me. So I don't come and go, whoa, now we got a show about, you know, Iron Man 9. Like, that's bad energy. Yeah. Bad energy. And let the Marvel people explore what they want. We'll explore what we want. Anyways, I feel I feel I need some more OJ and take a sip of juice here, Joseph. So what in your opinion, though? Let's talk about that thing. What could possibly dilute the magic? What does that truly mean? And have there been examples? And have we rubbed up against it sometimes? I've mentioned the comics. I've picked on them a few times today, but I still love having them every week to pick up. So, Joseph, any thoughts on what could possibly dilute the magic?
Nothing. No.
Yeah, fair.
I think in a lot of ways, for me, it is totally a matter of perspective. Your mm-hmm. point of view. For me as a fan, I do mean the answer. Nothing. The magic is the stories that exist. The magic is, you know, my memories, friendships, relationships. This podcast. If I never watched another new Star Wars thing, it would still be magical. So, like, for me, the magic will never die. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes I think it is a balancing act. We talked about show business at the top of the podcast, right? And I think that's all it is. It's really about the way that you release new stories. I don't want them to stop releasing new stories because I want to know more about the galaxy. Mm-hmm. I just want it to be doled out like a great song that starts big and then gets a little quieter and then builds up to the chorus and then has this amazing solo and then has a big finish. Like, I want a calendar release schedule to feel like that. That's what I mean when I want things to be event, not necessarily a ton less, but just feel like it's really got a rhythm to it so that it gives people the time and the space to get excited, to shift gears, to get in a different mood, to contrast the kinds of shows and the kinds of events. I think that is one of the things that's going to keep Star Wars magical, is not just the stories, but the way they're presented and the rhythm that they're presented to people. Mm-hmm. So I think that if we kind of fell onto algorithm nightmare and it was just like, here's another, and there's kind of no soul to the way they're being delivered or the room for them to breathe, I think that might dilute the magic a little bit for me. This is going back a little bit to what we were talking about previously, but like a thing that helps me make sure that the magic doesn't dilute is always just trying to see it from other people's eyes, right? You know, I love the sequel trilogy, so I got no problem. But if I ever did have a problem seeing it through the eyes of somebody, a young woman who got to grow up with Rey, hey, the magic's back for me. Got an essay coming out on our YouTube channel this week about how I connect with tech. Every new story is an opportunity for people to see themselves in Star Wars. And that is one of the things that for me will make it so the magic never dilutes, is to take a deep breath and see it from somebody else's perspective, who is feeling a part of it. I think for me that those are my thoughts on diluting the magic.
Yeah. No, great stuff there. And one of the things, the big thing to talk about is one of the things I go to is, there, I feel, and like you said, Jen, yes, it's a big company. Even Lucasfilm is, you could say now, a big company. It's been around a long time and done a lot of great things in this industry. So it isn't auteur from Modesto making his space opera anymore. It stopped being that in 78, right? 77, it was no longer that. It was something else. So there's a reverence, I think, that the people making this stuff have for it. And I don't mean, you know, fanboy, fan person and over Star Wars. I mean, like, they understand the weight of it. Even if they make a misstep here and there, they get it and how it's presented. As I'm listening to you talk, Joseph, I'm thinking of some of the stuff from Star Wars Celebration, how just a montage of clips of people cheering and walking around in costumes and saying, yay, I love Star Wars, can sometimes get me misty-eyed, you know, just like, That needs to exist. That's truly the magic. And for every joke about what are they going to make a movie about a Gonk droid? Sure. I'd love that, because now Gonky's one of my heroes. So let's figure it out. That's not the diluting the magic. The magic is if it starts to truly feel like a conveyor belt. And some people would argue that, again, one comic I ran to a month ago, it was talking about Disney just trying to make money. Okay. Is that what you feel? Have you spent time with it? Have you gone to these conventions? Are you truly a fan? That's some of the stuff too. And, you know, the Rebels win on Endor and some people just want the story to end there, but it doesn't, because that's the reality. We are in this time where you're going to see what stories can we tell? What movies can we make? All right, so we're going to keep the story going. How do we make that work where the Rebel victory in Endor still has power? That magic still exists in your heart from seeing it in 83 or 97 or wherever you saw it first. But the story continues, and now moves other people. That's the magic. That's what's going on. And I don't think you can dilute that until you truly just start cranking it out. And the quality suffers. And I just hearing Bob Iger go back to that, hearing that, they have that in mind. They're leaning into it. So, Jen, a lot of thoughts there. Take us home. You mentioned earlier, yeah, sometimes, hey, maybe there can be too much, or maybe life and time, you know, where do you go with the idea of deleting the magic?
I think you're right. The conveyor belt idea, if they were to start cranking it out. I mean, if you watch any of those behind the scenes documentaries, you will see the artisans that are working on the creatures, that are working on the costumes, and they need time and they need money. And I'll tell you one thing, Star Wars fans are patient. Right. We remember the dark times where there was no Star Wars. And if that means that they are going to have to slow down production to make things right, to make things look amazing and feel epic and make it a true like premiere event, then I think Star Wars fans will be OK with that. And that will preserve this kind of magic. I think that they've done a great job with it. I have no problem with it. But I don't imagine that they would suddenly start ramping it up and we'd be getting all these new shows and movies and whatever. I don't think that's going to happen. But I think, that's why we love Star Wars, is because the people that are involved in Star Wars, if they're not already fans and they don't love it, then they at least respect it, and they respect their own craft, like Tony Gilroy, and they're going to bring it within the Star Wars framework. Right. So, I mean, we love Star Wars. That's why we are here right now.
And look, you mentioned those docs. I always go to those. Yeah. You know, I'll probably never change your opinion on Rise of Skywalker. I'm talking to a general audience, not you, Jen. I might never change your opinion in the green room at Flappers Comedy Club, but watch that doc and tell me that there isn't love and care and reverence and magic involved with it. It didn't hit for you. That is a different conversation, and that's totally fine. And it clearly an option, but it's there, at least we think, but hey, what are you going to do? All right, so I think we can close the book on Grandpa Liam and his conversation there. But I do think context is important here. I was with you too, Joseph. When I saw the clip, I was like, what was he doing? Is he holding a press conference? Oh, no, he was just on one of those Graham Norton-like shows where wild, crazy things are said and things are thrown at you, and sometimes some things like this will emerge. So,
yeah.
And his son was bartending, by the way, on the show.
He was? His son who voiced young Liam in the Tales of the Jedi that diluted the magic? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was bartending. So, and Paul Rudd was on, and I don't know if they were drinking or not, but maybe that could explain some things too.
One thing I was with the club, when Liam starts talking, his son did young Qui-Gon, I said young Liam, but Liam starts talking, Paul Rudd has a reaction that just was like, oh man, I'm glad I'm not answering this.
It really is a thing. Like, Paul Rudd is in the middle of promoting this huge Marvel film that is going to be under scrutiny for, are they making too much Marvel? He's in there next to Liam Neeson going, too many of this stuff.
Paul Rudd's like, just show a clip of Mac and me and let's go. Let's get on out of here. Oh, that's a great clip. All right, we're going to get on out of here. Before we do, we always take a look at This Week in Star Wars History, looking ahead to Star Wars Past. And on February 21st, 1946. We've talked about this man before, and we will continue to. Anthony Daniels was born. The man, the voice, the soul inside C-3PO. Of course, Anthony's place in Star Wars history and conventions, Anthony and conventions, is secure. But what do we love about his involvement in Star Wars all these years later? And maybe, I don't know, what were some of our favorite C-3PO moments as kids and maybe now? Jen, I'm going to start with you here, because you've probably watched a few episodes of Droids in your day.
I love that he crafted a performance that is both elegant and full of anxiety. It's just so memorable and iconic. I love that Anthony Daniels has always been proud to be a part of Star Wars, a part of the Star Wars community. He has a lot of respect for the character and for Star Wars fans. And I really appreciate that. He's always happy to do, you know, the voice or talk about his memories from being on set. But my favorite 3PO moments as a kid and even now was really, you know, Return of the Jedi. Everything in Return of the Jedi is just great, because that was my first introduction to him. And, you know, the thing that I like about it is that he proves that he is a real asset to the rebels, you know, and the fact that he does understand all the different languages, that's how they get into Jabba's palace. That, and he kind of serves as like a mediator. And then the twist of fate where the Ewoks think that he's a god, right? And he's like sitting there as Han is about to be, you know, served up for dinner. And it's just funny. Like, he finally has this moment of power. And it's just great. And I just love 3PO. I love him so much, even though my action figure has lost his arm. I don't know how it happened, but he lost his arm.
We'll get you a new one and paint it red there. Yeah, I love everything you're saying there. Return of Jedi, you know, is pretty powerful in my life and loving those moments. You know, I don't know if the Han tapping him on the shoulder three times thing had been released now. I don't know. It might not have been one of my favorite moments. As a kid, oh my God, that was peak cinema. Just the best. I just enjoyed everything about it. I was like, Han doesn't
got me in.
Yeah. Han keeps tapping him, but he does. He's 3PO's trying to do what he says. Oh, it's hilarious. I loved it. One of my favorite moments is Empire. Again, go to Han. And, you know, I've grown up a Han fan, but just Han treating 3PO, quite frankly, like crap in Empire Strikes Back and most of the movies, but, you know, whispering under his breath to Chewie about, yeah, we better fix it. And just 3PO has that double take. Anthony Daniels does a great double take of, but I just said that, but I'm not getting credit for it, but there's probably nothing I can do about it. This guy doesn't treat me right. And it just was one of my favorite little moments that I loved as a kid for just a comedy double take reasons. But as an adult, I've enjoyed it more and more. So there's some stuff in the modern films I love as well. But Joseph, I want to go back to you as a kid with 3PO.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's so many 3PO moments that I really enjoyed. And sometimes people are like, hey, everybody on Force Center agrees a lot. I don't know if we're disagreeing or not, Ken, but I still love the 3PO tap joke in Return of the Jedi. I think it's a great bit of comedy because it is so much about 3PO trying to help, trying to do what he needs to, and Han just being a jerk. Yeah. To quote one of my favorite 3PO moments is when 3PO mumbles to himself in Empire Strikes Back, "Impossible, man."
Yes.
It's so understandable and so judgmental. Like, you know, 3PO would ask him, can I ask about this? Well, sure, why not? And Han walks away. You know, being a big Empire fan growing up, almost everything about 3PO being blasted, and I don't mean that as an anti-3PO thing. It's just the beats around it are just peak 3PO. Him being so happy to hear a familiar voice that he wanders off, and then that great sort of etiquette reaction when we don't see the stormtrooper yet, but with the no, please don't get up.
Yes,
it's such a great 3PO etiquette thing. And then I've always loved the moment where Chewie is putting him back together and he's coming back online and then realizes what's happened and says, "Oh no, I've been shot." It's a comedy moment that's also like heavy at the same time. So those are some of my favorites growing up.
Love that there. And as far as some later ones or modern ones, I think we all love a lot of the Rise of Skywalker moments and that Rey, no one knows the odds better than you moment. It was just felt like, yes, finally, after all these years, someone gets it there. So we can talk about that there. But I do want to highlight the Clone Wars one. You and I, Joseph, on the Clone Wars Report, that episode where he has to plan the party for Padme was 3PO in his element. And it was just fun to watch. It's one of my favorite moments there.
Absolutely great. Yeah, like it's on him to make sure this important bill passes because his party's got to go well. Yeah, I love it when we get to concentrate on what his actual skills are. The and in Rise of Skywalker, the "no one asked but I'm all right" great comedy line. The Force Awakens introduction where he steps in the middle of Leia and Han coming back together, all great stuff. And I think a tribute to Anthony Daniels, ultimately, you know, he's you can make the jokes that that he will do anything in all things Star Wars, that, you know, he's got some hot mic moments and seems like maybe he likes a little bit of gossip now and then. But he's been such a great ambassador of Star Wars. You hear that voice and you're welcomed into the galaxy far, far away. And I think it's, you know, inspiring that he made the absolute most of an opportunity of his voice was supposed to be replaced. But he made that character what it was with his voice, with his performance, and then it couldn't be changed. And then he's been connected to this story for decades because he swung for the fences.
Love that. Well said indeed. Yeah, yeah. It could be easy to poke a little fun. He's so such a big personality. Takes over every panel he's on, and we you could you could see it. That's fine. But it all comes from this place of, I am 3PO. I love 3PO. I care about him and I care about people's reactions to him. So in the end, that's a good thing. Jen, any modern moments you want to discuss before we head on down the road?
No, you guys have covered it all. I'm just glad that he's, still out there and still being a part of the fan community. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. We have to enjoy our time,
Indeed. So happy birthday to you, Anthony Daniels. We are happy to have you inside that golden mask. We are out of here today, but want to let you know where you can find us. We're on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Hive Social as well, Force Center. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram and on YouTube. Head over there, subscribe, hit the notification bell. You can join us for the live show this Friday. We got essays, we got figure fights, we got shorts, we got old episodes there. Check it out. Podcasts available on Acast, iHeartRadio, a lot of other spots. Just search, you'll find us. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Follow me at KatNapsok. Go to my website, katnapsok.com for more. I need more water today. That's been my problem. Jen, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter sometimes, Instagram, YouTube at Jennifer Landa, TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138. And I will be talking about my Star Wars book recommendations for kids soon enough.
Valuable stuff. Check it out, everybody. Joseph working hard on a lot of projects. Some of them they can find right now. So where can they do that?
Yeah, you can find me on social media, still on Twitter. I'm also trying to be on Hive and Mastodon, definitely on Instagram. So lots of different places to find me. But if you want to find some of the new short films and comedy stuff I'm doing, you can go to my YouTube channel and look for Joseph Scrimshaw in particular. In the last couple weeks, I put up a new short film called Unboxing the Cosmos. It's about 12 minutes of cosmic horror. So check it out if that sounds like fun to you.
Check it out indeed. All right. So for everyone, including Liam Neeson, we'll see you next time here on Force.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.